You're listening to The Sports Rabbi, hosted by Josh Halichman.
We're back here with the Sports Rabbi, Josh Halichman. Welcome aboard to the Sports Rabbi Show. Today we have a very special show. Of course, the situation in Israel is not exactly the best for playing sports right now, considering that the country is under rocket fire coming from Gaza and the terrorist organizations. We have two great guests with us to try to explain the situation, both on the ground here in Israel and what it's doing in the media world as well. First on, we have Peter Lerner. He is a lieutenant colonel of the IDF, of the Israel Defense Forces, and we discuss all about the situation, how it began, how it boiled over, and what the exact ramifications are for the people living here on a day-to-day basis, and how to stay safe as best as possible as well. Peter Lerner, wonderful guest, somebody that has worked in the IDF for more than 25 years or so. Fabulous, as he explains so eloquently the situation here on the ground in Israel. After Peter Lerner, we have on Anne Herzberg. Anne Herzberg of NGO Monitor. She's a human rights lawyer, someone that understands the media and how it works, how the various organizations try to feed a lot of misinformation out into the world, and how we can possibly find the right information about what is really going on here in Israel. As well, we talk a little bit about Tom Brady in there also. We get a little into sports. We talk about some of the athletes that are putting out some of this misinformation as well, some of the politicians, and how that can be combated as best as possible, and where you can find the best information to understand what is going on here in the land of Israel. Make sure you subscribe to The Sports Rabbi Show at The Sports Rabbi, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We are on Google Podcasts, Spotify, as well as Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star rating. You can check out all my stuff, sportsrabbi.com, both in English and in Hebrew. We have a great article up there. Scotty Wilbeck and the Star Guard of Maccabi Tel Aviv and his wife spoke to Israeli TV last night and discussed the situation, and they discussed exactly that they, you know, feel safe here in Israel. So I highly recommend you checking that out. Also, I have a fun article about the different reactions from various athletes, both abroad and here in Israel as well. You can check that out too. SportsRabbi.com, at The Sports Rabbi, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram for the best and latest news in Israeli sports. First up is Peter Lerner, Lieutenant Colonel, IDF, and then Anne Herzberg. Enjoy the program.
You're listening to The Sports Rabbi.
All right, we're back here with The Sports Rabbi, Josh Halichman. We have a very special program for you today. We're kind of moving away from sports, but yet hanging in on sports, and we have a couple of great guests. First up, we have a Lieutenant Colonel of the IDF, of the Israel Defense Forces, Tsahal, in reserve right now, Peter Lerner. He had retired back from the spokesperson unit in 2017. He has much experience dealing with world media and the like, and we're going to speak to him. After that, we have Anne Herzberg on, and we'll speak to her about a whole slew of topics as well. But first, Peter Lerner, of course, has been in the Army, has seen these things, has worked in situations before where there are incidents with Hamas firing rockets and missiles into Israel. So he is a savvy veteran. He also works today with the Histadrut, and we'll get into that as well. Peter Lerner, thank you for coming on board today. How are you?
Thank you very much. I am good. You know, we've had a few interesting days here, but overall, I'd say safe and sound. I have a lot of faith in our military and the men and women on the front line. So good. Safe.
All right, Peter, we'll just get started off. I live in Jerusalem. You're in Ramat Gan. You just had some sirens going off. You've had some sleepless nights over the last couple of days. I'm in Jerusalem. We got the first salvo of action on Yom Yerushalayim on Monday. But break down exactly what started this conflict. There's a lot of misinformation out there, and they talk about Sheikh Jarrah, and they talk about, you know, people pulling people out of homes and evicting people. I don't really believe that that's what started this incident. So first of all, for all the listeners that are out there, what began this round of violence here in Israel?
So I would definitely say it's a combination of several things, but it ultimately boils down to Hamas competing with Fatah, the two Palestinian political factions, over power, over ownership of religion and responsibilities for the Palestinian people, the Palestinian cause as they see it. Hamas is a terrorist organization, I would say a genocidal terrorist organization. And whenever there is internal dispute between the two factions of Palestinian politics, it always seems to spill over into Israel. Adding to the fact that there was supposed to be elections on the Palestinian front, that because Fatah, Mahmoud Abbas, Abu Mazen, felt that they were going to lose to Hamas, so he called the elections off, created more incentive. Add to the fact that during the holy month of Ramadan, there have been some tensions caused, in my view, a lot because of the way the police actually managed, or if you like, mismanaged some of the friction points at in Jerusalem, and created an increase in tensions. And then there is the issue, the question of Sheikh Jarrah, which has also raised more friction. So there's this I would say soup. There is so many different ingredients, and it's like it was simmering before. And on Monday, I was just packing my stuff up in the office at 5 p.m. when Hamas came out with their statement that they intend on opening fire at Israel at 6. And such a short deadline clearly indicated that they were serious and they were going to open fire. And that's when you received the first barrage in the area of Jerusalem of rockets towards Israel.
Now, have you been surprised at the amount of rockets that have been fired out of Gaza? Have you been surprised at the amount of the volume that they're going? Obviously, it's part of their plan to try to shoot as many as possible, because they know that the Iron Dome, and you can talk about the Iron Dome as well, which is the defense system that the IDF has to knock out these missiles. Many of the, when they shoot off, say, you know, 100 in a short period of time, the Iron Dome is going to miss some of these missiles, and that kind of gives them a little bit more incentive to shoot off more. Have you been surprised at the volume of the amount that we've been seeing? And you've been surprised at how many times the center of Israel has been attacked? Because usually in the past years, we see this going on in Ashkelon or Sderot or towns and communities that are close to the border. We did see this, of course, back in 2014, where there were significant attacks into the center of the country, but we're seeing it with a lot more gusto this time, we should say.
So I would say that when we ended the conflict in 2014 with the ceasefire, we were at around 200 or so rockets per day, volume being fired at Israel from Gaza. And from the Israelis' perspective, we were at the stage of targeting high-rise buildings with command and control positions in Gaza. So we basically began on Monday where we'd left off, plus 7 years. So you have 7 years of each side preparing, meaning Hamas has taken the time to develop new technologies, to develop more capabilities, to increase the volume of their weapons stockpiling. On the other hand, Israel has taken that time to gather intelligence, to fine-tune its precision capabilities, to conduct reconnaissance activities, to coordinate between all the different units, from naval forces to air force to special forces, that are all operating in tandem together over the last 3 days. Mm-hmm. And I would say that so nothing really came to me as a big surprise. Mm-hmm. Since the operation in 2014 ended, we've always been saying it's a question of when not if. Basically, right. Because nothing strategically has changed between the two partners. There's no peace agreement. There is no real development of Gaza with regard to the quality of life. There is a dire situation. And then you add the internal politics to it, as I pointed out earlier, and that's the result. So we have a situation here where both sides have been preparing for the day. We didn't know what would be the trigger. I think Israel was, in my view, could have been better prepared from an intelligence perspective. There was a lot of belief that there was a lot of deterrence, mutual deterrence between the two. But when we looked at the combination of the things that brought the spillover on Monday, I think we could have been prepared and known that this was going to happen. And maybe even why, they'll have to look into that and review that. So currently we're like 3 days into the conflict. Within those 3 days, Hamas have fired around 1,400 missiles, rockets into Israel. Today, they launched explosive drones into Israel that have been intercepted. They've launched rockets to Tel Aviv several times, to Jerusalem once, and to the south of Israel extensively from Beersheba and to Ashkelon and Ashdod and other places. And they keep saying that they're going to continue with surprises. I don't think they have any real strategic surprises that we could talk about. Perhaps there are some tactical surprises that they could pull out of their sleeves. But I would say in force, the IDF obviously outnumbers, outsmarts, outmaneuvers them every single time because of our intelligence capabilities, because of the quick interception, because of the confidence we have in Iron Dome and our defensive mechanisms. Mm-hmm. So you combine the whole picture and the way up of the forces, and it's clear that Israel is going to have the upper hand. And then you have to ask, okay, what is Hamas trying to gain out of it? Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily think they obviously don't believe that they can defeat Israel. So they're trying to gain leverage on the Israeli front and clout within the Palestinian front. And we need to make sure that the leverage is in line with Israel's interests. So there might be something we can give them at the end of the day when there is some sort of a ceasefire that will benefit safety and security for Israel. But it will also mean that they have something to lose. And we have to make sure that they don't have clout or too much clout and leverage within the Palestinian arena, because these, as I said, this is a genocidal terrorist organization. We don't need them gaining more interest and more capabilities on the Palestinian front.
Right. Of course, we're on here with Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner, IDF reserve. Peter, the other issue that's been going on here in the land of Israel and the state of Israel has been these, we call riots or anarchy that's been going on in some of the cities, be it Lod, be it Akko, be it the unfortunate incident in Bat Yam just on Wednesday night, which should never happen. There are on both sides, Arabs and Jews, that are just going after each other on the streets in towns that some towns that are, you know, we could call it coexistence towns, so like Lod, Ramle, even Akko, where there is people living in both. How has this played into the factor? Why have the Arab population been a little bit emboldened? And we've all seen that also, obviously, in Jerusalem, not so much maybe yesterday, but at the beginning of this, they seem very much emboldened to show their strength also on the street.
So this is an unfortunate reality, but I think in my view, it's a combination of, again, the month of Ramadan and how access to Al-Aqsa has been, and the questions of Sheikh Jarrah. So there's a lot of questions for the Israeli Arab population about these things as well. Add into the fact of Israeli politics and the divisiveness perhaps within the Israeli society, and how Israeli politics has been playing to the Arab population. So there's a lot of stuff brewing beneath the surface, and the radical Islamic parties and definitely their connection with Hamas have also got an interest to bring out masses to conduct civil unrest. What we've seen over the last 2 days has been heartbreaking. I was watching television what was happening in Batiam and Akko last night, and this is not what we expect. So what we have to see is an effective police force get into action, restore calm and order. We need politicians to step up to the plate, from Jewish politicians, Muslim politicians, Christian politicians, all come to the plate and basically stand shoulder to shoulder and say, you know, we are in this together. We have to build our society back better. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's beyond possible, but I definitely think it's going to be tough, especially while there's an ongoing conflict with Gaza, and there are so much emotions involved on all sides. There's so much open at the moment, Joshua, and it's something that we really need to keep in mind. And I would say, let's see how this actually develops over the next few days.
Okay, it should definitely be interesting. Now, of course, you know me, the sports rabbi. I keep up with all the sports, you know, what's going on here in Israel as well in the United States. I write for the Jerusalem Post. I have my own website, sportsrabbi.com. And I follow, obviously, how the players are reacting, both in the NBA, for example, and players here. Now, the Israeli Basketball League, for example, has many foreign players, primarily from the United States. It's a 99% of the foreign players, and you're talking about roughly 5 foreign players per team times 13 teams in the main league, plus then there's some in the minor leagues as well. So there's a significant amount of players that are here that are experiencing this for the first time. You are, you know, a veteran, unfortunately, me, a veteran, unfortunately, as well. What can you tell these people that are listening in right now about the situation, how to feel, you know, obviously you're concerned, but that they are in a safe place, that they have the ability to rely on the Israel Defense Forces and the authorities, that they are doing everything within their power to keep them obviously in the loop and also understand it, because there's, you know, a lot of these people, a lot of these players, they're human beings. They don't understand the language. Their families are watching CNN and they're watching BBC, or they're watching Sky News, and they're obviously seeing, you know, explosion after explosion go off, and it's very disarming. And many of the players are, you know, saying, you know, we're concerned, we want to go home. On the flip side, you have also players. For an example, a Maccabi Tel Aviv star guard, Scotty Wilbekin, going on TV last night saying that they have 110% faith in the system, in the Iron Dome, in their team, and also in God, as they are Christian. But there's obviously, you know, two sides. There are also many that are very, very afraid.
Obviously, that's understandable. And for people that have not ever experienced such a situation of, you know, putting faith in a system to protect your life and well-being from an external influence. So I think if we can learn anything from the last year of coronavirus in Israel, we act pretty well in the state of emergency. We're able to rally around the flag, get our business together, and get results. And I think our success in the COVID, especially in the distribution of vaccines in the crisis, is probably symptomatic of the Israeli psyche of how to deal with crises at a whole. So we're currently in a crisis, and I would say that there are two components of dealing with incoming rockets, as we've seen. So there is the systems responsibility, and that falls under the line of active defense. Active defense is, as you pointed out, the Iron Dome missile defense system. I saw in the Economist last night that the IDF is saying that they have a 90 to 95% interception rate up until now, which is, you know, that's better than COVID, I think, in the vaccines. So that's pretty good. And when they say 90 to 95, it means incoming rockets that are suspected to land in populated areas, 90% of those are intercepted. To deal with the 10% or so that is not being intercepted, it brings us to the second component, and that is passive defense. how the each individual needs to act in when there is an alarm. Now, about an hour ago, an hour and a half ago, we had an alarm here in Tel Aviv. And myself and my staff, we all went down to our shelter in the building here in the headquarters of the Histadrut. And we heard the explosions of the interception of the Iron Dome, but we did our responsibility when it went into a protected area and took care of ourselves. And we need to be listened to the rules and the regulations and the of the system in order to take responsibility of ourselves. So we would say to those that are concerned, listen to what's being said, act accordingly, put some faith in the system, take a lot of responsibility for yourself, and you should be okay. You know, we've had, unfortunately, up until now, 7 deaths out of 1,400 rockets that have been fired at Israel. Each death is a tragedy, and of course it's a world that has collapsed into itself in that catastrophe. But it means that people are acting accordingly most of the time, taking responsibility like you do on the pitch or in the court. You take your steps forward and you try and put the ball where it's supposed to be. So put yourself in a safe place. Don't take unnecessary risks. And make sure that your team is working with you on that.
Yeah, no, for sure. 100%. The teams have been very good with the players as much as they can. And of course, your calming voice and advice will definitely go very far. Before we let you go, Peter, talk a little bit about what you do. You describe it on your Twitter. And of course, if you want to follow Peter for all the latest news, I highly recommend it. It's at LTC Peter Lerner. So check that out. You call yourself a bridge builder for the Histadrut. So talk a little bit about what you do.
So Israel was founded by the Histadrut, which is the General Federation of Labor in Israel. We were established in 1920, well before the State of Israel was brought together. And the idea was to organize the Jewish workers in the Holy Land so that they have employment, so that they have a functioning system. So we had a network of schools, a network of health providers. We had a construction company, quite a unique model with regard to trade unionism. And over the years, we've evolved. And today we are the strongest trade union in Israel. And today we are responsible for some 800,000 members, around 20% of Israel's workforce, and we are their voice, and we bring them the rights and responsibilities, balancing out the needs of the economy and the individual, and fighting on their behalf. You know, my wife yesterday, because of the rockets that we had on Tuesday night, she stayed at home, and you know, her employer said, "We're deducting a holiday day for you." And she said to me, "Hey, Peter, you're my union guy. What are you going to do about it?" Mm-hmm. So I talked to her rep and I said, "This was the situation." And by the end of the day, that was sorted out. So today she's working from home. They're not deducting any holidays. So my job today is to be a bridge between the workers of Israel, whether they're Israeli, Palestinian, minority worker, other minorities, or foreign workers. The Histadrut is an umbrella for all of those workers. And we are, in my role, responsible for bridging the differences and bringing knowledge from abroad, from our brothers and sisters in the trade union movement, bringing their knowledge here so that the workers here can benefit from that. And on the other hand, exporting information and knowledge that we're experiencing, for instance, like in the COVID crisis, to improve and better in the global community. So it's an interesting role. My former role in the military was, and my final role in my 25 years of service was as the spokesperson of the IDF. Mm-hmm. And today I don't see myself as a representative anymore of the government, and they definitely don't pay me. But I do see myself as a very deeply connected Israeli that believes in our right to self-defense. And that's why I will be very active on social media saying this is the situation here in Israel. What you see in the media sometimes is obscured and even out of sync with reality, over hyperbolic, over dramatic, and out of context. And therefore, my role is, I guess, in my small world of influence, is to give some context to what I have experienced, what I know from how the military operates. I think one of the biggest questions that I've been asked over the last couple of days, why are there 60 or more Palestinians killed in the last 3 days? How is that even acceptable? And it's, you know, the way the terrorist organizations embed themselves within the civilian population, where they are launching their command control rockets, intelligence activities, where they are utilizing, they're doing it from within the civilian population. So in the last 3 days, the IDF has conducted some 650 operations, strikes. And in those strikes, you see the vast majority of them are precision, intelligence-based, and result-orientated to take out specific threats or specific tools or specific challenges that we see down the line, and definitely take out the leadership of the terrorists. Right. So it's trying to give some of the context beyond perhaps the headlines that don't or can't or won't want to go into depth. So, you know, when you asked me to join you on your show, I was happy to participate and give some context. And I think, you know, in order to understand what's going on here, you have to go beyond what your regular media is giving you. Not because I think they're wrong. I think the media is a business. They're motivated a lot of the time by money, by drama, and preconceptions of how they see the conflict. Indeed, Israel is a strong player today, and sometimes as a strong player, we come out with the short end of the stick. I'm not willing to sacrifice our civilians because Hamas are hiding behind their civilians. And this is sometimes what is missing, a double standard in judgment. When what would you expect of the government, of the US government, you know, if Mexico was shooting rockets into the US? I think Mexico would have a hard time day after. And that's just the focus of trying to say, okay, what would I expect from my government? How would they conduct themselves? I would say on comparative military standards, we are, that these Israeli Defense Forces are flag bearers in precision warfare, in intelligence-based warfare. And we set an example where other militaries come and learn from us how we do it with causing so little collateral damage. And again, I don't belittle the tragedy on the other side of the fence, and my heart goes out to those that are suffering. But at the end of the day, if their leadership chooses to take us to war and threaten millions of Israelis under the rocket fire and explosive drones, and perhaps we will see naval activity on our beaches from Gaza, and maybe penetrating tunnels into south of Israel that they could try and implement. So if they're going to try and challenge us, they're going to pay the price, without a doubt. I don't feel, you know, I feel sorry for the people, but I don't feel sorry for the leadership that is putting the people in that position. They will pay a price.
Peter Lerner, Lieutenant Colonel Reserve from the IDF Israel Defense Forces, an honor and a pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing your time with everybody that's out there. It was very valuable. And I think you opened up the eyes of many, many people with by coming on this program. So thank you so much, Peter. I want to wish you the most safety and your family to be safe over these times. And also a Shabbat Shalom and a Chag Sameach, as the holiday of Shavuot is coming up next week as well.
Thank you so much, and Chag Sameach, and thank you to all your listeners.
You're listening to The Sports Rabbi.
All right, we're back here with The Sports Rabbi, Josh Halleckman. I just want to thank, of course, Lieutenant Colonel of the IDF, Peter Lerner, for joining me on the last portion of the show. Now, of course, we're bringing on another great, great person and supporter of Israel. It's none other than Anne Herzberg out of Jerusalem. She's a human rights lawyer, author, works with NGO Monitor, legal advisor, UN liaison. I can go through here. Unfortunately, you're a Patriots fan. I don't know if that's good.
I am.
considering that I'm a Jets fan, I don't know if that's good, but whatever. What can we do? We still like Anne Hertzberg, welcome to the Sports Rabbi Show. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on. I won't hold it again. I won't apologize for liking the Pats.
that's okay. Are you happy? Were you happy that Tom Brady went to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and won a Super Bowl? Does that make you happy?
It was tough times. last year.
You weren't happy to see him lift up the trophy one more time. I know that didn't work for you.
If Julian Edelman ends up there next year, it might break me, but other than that.
Well, he claims to have retired, right? So we'll have to see.
Right.
So, Anne, one of the reasons we have you on here today is, of course, we're a sports show and we have plenty of people, players that are listening to the show either in Israel, outside of Israel, people that have played in Israel, people that could be playing in Israel, soccer, basketball, all different types of sports, a lot of their fans. And Peter really so eloquently described the situation as to really why the incidents that are going on now with Hamas firing over 1,000 rockets into Israel and the like. He was excellent, and he really explained exactly what is going on, what people have to understand, and why things are going on, and how that the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces, are obviously above the game, and they understand what has to be done and are protecting its citizens and the people that are living here to obviously the highest degree that they can. And he was just fantastic. I want to have you on a little bit to talk about what you do. And, you know, there's a lot of misinformation that's out there in the media. We see a lot of posts that are going up all over social media saying that, you know, if it's from the likes of AOC or the Ilhan Omars of the world, or now Jamal Bowman, who took over for Elliot Engel and seat in New York, and you know, Rashid Tlaib. There's a lot of misinformation. There's a lot of 10% truths that go out there. I wouldn't even say half truths. 10% truths as to the real situation. And how can people that are looking at the media go to the right places to find out what's really going on and to really understand the crux of the matters? And I think you'd be a great person to help us with that.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me on again. That's I think what a lot of people don't realize is there's a huge industry of really, you know, spreading misinformation about Israel. It gets funded, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars a year. And so it can be very hard to sift through accurate information from, you know, like you're saying, the 10% truths and the deliberate misinformation. So one of the things we do at my organization, NGO Monitor, is we look at a group of organizations known as NGOs, which stands for non-governmental organizations. And these are groups that maybe some of your listeners have heard of: Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch. Probably most of the other groups they've never heard of. But what most people don't realize is that when they're reading a media story primarily, or let's say they might see something put out by the UN, almost all of that information originates from these NGOs. And many of these organizations have agendas that really unfortunately are not giving out accurate information. And this happens in a couple ways, both factually and also regarding the law. And I think the other thing that's interesting is when we're having times like these, you know, unfortunately flare-ups in the conflict, suddenly everyone in the media is an expert on international law, you know? So you start hearing them like throwing out legal terms, you know, like proportionality and indiscriminate, you know, and war crimes and all the, you know, all these things that they don't have a clue as to what they mean. And invariably they're always using them wrong. So what we try to do is we try to look at what NGOs are saying and kind of unpack what they're saying and analyze it as what they're saying is accurate. Are they giving over factual information? And also, you know, when I actually work a lot at the United Nations, and there it's also very important to giving counter reports to challenge a lot of the claims that the UN is getting from these NGOs. And now the UN, you know, it's very hard to influence them because they of course are also big drivers of this agenda. But at least you can put on the record counter information. So it, you know, so I'd invite people to look at our website, NGO Monitor, you know, to try to get more information. Also on, you know, Twitter can be a horrible place, but
the cesspool of life.
Understatement. Yes. But there are actually some really good accounts where you get unvarnished information. There's a guy known as Joe Truesman, mm-hmm. Who he's been doing this now for about probably a little over 5 years, and basically he scours through the Palestinian terror accounts and just posts the stuff that they're saying and doing. Because a lot of times, you know, when you see in the media or an NGO or an UN, they're not going to report on the stuff the terror groups are saying. So in this conflict, one thing that's been super interesting, and it's really the first time I've been seeing it, I have not seen it in past flare-ups, is so the IDF estimates that probably about a third of the rocket launches are actually falling in Gaza. Mm-hmm. And that I would imagine is probably a similar percentage that's been happening in previous wars, but it's killing a lot of people. And we're actually seeing really for the first time groups in Gaza admitting that. Like normally Hamas has such a tight control over the information, mm-hmm. that anything negative to Hamas does not make it out of Gaza. But strangely, right now in this conflict, we are seeing a few groups admitting that the rockets really are killing people. And they've killed, most of the children that have been killed have been by falling rockets in Gaza. And that's really important. What I think is so, for our listeners, just to understand kind of the really dishonest reporting that comes out from, you know, the UN in particular, they were blaming these things on Israeli airstrikes, but you had people on the ground in Gaza reporting that it was from fallen Hamas rockets, mm-hmm. you know? So that to me is a new dynamic, and I hope one that will continue so that, you know, we can really have much better casualty information and better information about what's really going on there.
Right, of course. Chris, we're on here with Ann Hertzberg talking all about the media situation. You know, it's interesting. Here's one great post on your Twitter feed, and I highly recommend everybody checking out Ann's Twitter feed. It's at ANNEHERZBERG14. Isn't there a reason you have the 14 there?
I guess there were 13 other Ann Hertzbergs. They just randomly assigned me 14.
It wasn't for Tom Brady or anything like that, right?
No, I don't even know who wears 14.
So, you know, one of the posts you have here is International Criminal Court. One of our favorite people, Fatou Bensouda.
Yep.
She's the ICC prosecutor, loves Israel. And she writes here, "I note with great concern the escalation of violence in the West Bank, including East Jerusalem, as well as in and around Gaza, and the possible commission of crimes under the Rome Statute. I echo the call from the international community for calm, restraint, and stop the violence." Now, she kind of missed something there. What did she forget to put in there?
Well, exactly, the rockets.
Yeah, about over 1,000 rockets, right?
Like, I mean, is that a minor detail? You know, I mean, also, I think what was so, in my eyes, like egregious about what she said is the things she was talking about in Jerusalem did not rise to the level of war crimes. And, you know, if you were going to call something like that a war crime, it really would require a close analysis of what was going on. But with a rocket, it's automatically a war crime, because under international law, when you are the types of rockets that Hamas has, they're not precision rockets. They can't be aimed. So they are just indiscriminately firing the rockets, and they'll fall where they may, and they aim them towards population centers. So that's a fundamental violation of the laws of armed conflict. Mm-hmm. You cannot fire purposely at civilians, hoping to hurt them, you know? And because they can't be aimed, you can't say, like, you know, there may be a situation where you could say, oh, they were really trying to target some army base or something. They weren't intending to fire it at population centers. But because they can't aim the rockets, they can't say that, you know. And also on their social media accounts, in news articles, they're very blatantly admit the purpose is to, you know, attack Tel Aviv, attack Be'er Sheva, attack Jerusalem. So the purpose is to target and kill civilians. She's the prosecutor of the ICC. She could easily prove that crime tomorrow, which I think also that's a whole other discussion we could have, just about how the International Criminal Court is completely, you know, out to lunch. You know, but if she's, you know, they've had a really difficult time having trials and convictions. It's been in business over 20 years, almost 20 years. The budget is over $100 million a year, and they've had less than 10 trials and in those 20 years. And, you know, this would be a great way for them. They could try like 50 Hamas people tomorrow. It would like be a slam dunk. Mm-hmm. You know, and she doesn't even talk about that. So, yeah. But I think her attitude is really indicative. Because I've also been seeing like a lot of people who claim to be international law professors. So again, they've been tweeting, oh, they're very upset about stuff the IDF spokesperson's been saying on Twitter, you know, whatever. But then they say nothing about the rockets, you know? And it's just someone who's supposedly an expert in these legal matters. That's like, you know, lesson A.
Right.
It's so easy.
A, B, and C. You know? All three of them.
Right. It's so simple, and they don't even talk about it. Which again, I think goes to this agenda, you know, and the, you know, the whole like, you know. I guess they say whatever now, woke agenda or something.
Yeah, quite amazing. Of course, we're on here with Ann Hertzberg. You know, another one of our favorite places is the Human Rights Watch. They do a great job, especially for anybody that's against Israel. One of your other great posts here talks about how they have crude, they describe the rockets as crude and homemade. I think it's pretty hard to fire today. Apparently, there was a missile fired towards Eilat, if I'm correct, and into Tel Aviv, which is a good hour drive from the Gaza Strip. I don't know how crude or homemade those rockets could be if they are, A, traveling those distance. B, if you look at the posts on Anne's Twitter feed, you can see the damage that they do to these buildings. And even on my Twitter feed, I have some of that as well. But the Human Rights Watch, how do you combat an organization like that, Anne?
It's really hard. They, you know, they have a budget of $100 million a year.
Amazing.
And
how much
you
that,
know, so they
how
have,
much is that how much of that is spent on Israel?
It varies. I would say it's hard to say. I haven't looked recently. It was probably around 5 to 10 million in previous years. Mm-hmm. I haven't looked in the past couple of years. But I imagine it's around the same. Mm-hmm. But the thing with them is, it's not so much the amount of money. That's important. But it's also the amplification of their stuff on Israel. Like they put out a lot of reports in other countries. I mean, Israel, they put out the most output. Like we've studied it, and you know, we do counts every few years to kind of measure how much are they putting out on Israel versus other countries. And Israel is always near the top, if not the top. But the, and again, I know how bad the reports are on Israel. So frankly, even if I don't know a lot about a situation somewhere else, I don't really trust the reporting anywhere, frankly, because I know how bad their methodology is in Israel. So I imagine it's probably equally bad elsewhere. But what they do, though, is when it comes to Israel, they always have these massive like PR campaigns, social media campaigns, where you have everyone on the staff tweeting about it. They do press conferences. They send out the reports to the media in order to get, you know, on BBC, New York Times, France 24, all the big media outlets. And they amplify these reports much more than they do on other situations. So even though they may claim, oh yeah, we don't just write about Israel. We write about China and Syria and, you know, Central African Republic, but they don't do this full court PR press in other situations, you know, or Ken Roth, who's the head of Human Rights Watch, will tweet like dozens of times a day on Israel. You know, he's obsessed with it. Mm. So, so that also like really skews how the conflict is viewed. And again, like you said, I think that was a great example you highlighted about the crude and the homemade, because why are they doing that? The purpose is to diminish the severity of what it is to be bombarded with rockets. Oh, they're just little homemade nothings. What's the big deal? You know, who cares? Like that, that's what they're doing. And for human rights, for the group that claims to be the number one human rights group in the world, that's appalling. You know, it's like your human rights group shooting rockets at civilians is probably one of the worst human rights crimes, and they're trying to make it out like it's not a big deal,
right?
You know, and
it's a little bit of
what motivates that. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like, you know, you only have millions of people like having to sleep in bomb shelters the past 3 days.
But the argument that they'll give is, well, they don't have bomb shelters in the Gaza Strip, and we're suffocating the Gaza Strip. That's the, you know, that would be the complaint to that comment.
Right. And so the answer to that is, yeah, they don't have bomb shelters because A, Hamas steals the money for rockets instead of building bomb shelters.
Or vaccines.
We wouldn't be bombing them if they weren't shooting rockets. So the best kind of bomb shelter is not to bomb, you know? So it's like, if they weren't shooting rockets, they're not being bombed. And of course, they're really not being, unlike Hamas and the other Palestinian terror groups, Israel does have precision weaponry. Mm-hmm. So it's actually really, you know, you'll see when they do strikes, they're quite targeted. You know, they can strike a floor in the middle of a multi-story building if they want. It's pretty crazy. Yeah.
It's really amazing to watch.
Yeah. Technologically. Yeah. Or like, you know, they'll be getting a rocket squad on a motorcycle and they just get the motorcycle and nothing else around them is damaged, you know.
It's quite amazing. It's one of the people have to understand also that are listening to this, that Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and the other fine terror groups in the Gaza Strip are indiscriminately firing rockets into Israel with no precision, and they really don't care where they're going to land. They just want to do as much damage as possible and obviously kill as many people as they can, if they can. We spoke with Peter about, you know, the accuracy, of course, of the Iron Dome, which is extremely good. On the other hand, Israel takes every step of caution to make sure that if you're an innocent person, you are not going to get scathed. They are calling people up. They are sending flyers down. They are indicating, we are going into this building in X amount of time. You know, please be aware that people are getting phone calls. I got a phone call yesterday, actually. And it wasn't from the...
Oh, you did?
Of some description. I couldn't really make it out. They weren't speaking a language that I was familiar with. Probably it was Arabic because I do not speak that language. So I don't know what they were trying to tell me, but, you know, it was so
weird.
Maybe they got
that's interesting.
Maybe they got a wrong number. I don't know. But
that's really interesting.
Yeah, but Anne, that's obviously something that that we care for, because in essence, if Israel really wanted to end the conflict, it could probably be ended in a matter of minutes. And that's not what Israel's goal is. We want to have peace and live side by side with our neighbors in a fine fashion, just as we are with many other different countries that are out there. And I think that's really the ultimate goal here. But the more misinformation that's spread, it kind of lights the fire that really people have to understand Hamas's charter calls for what, Anne?
Genocide. The murder of a Jew, wherever you can find them.
That's the unfortunate truth.
Yep.
And I want to hit another topic with you over here.
Sure.
People that are, you know, a lot of people try to go on Twitter to find out information. We know it's a cesspool and there's a lot of, you know, misinformation that's out there. There are also, you know, some social media stars that sit in the U.S. Congress, amazingly, that they are voted in. You know, and the AOCs of the world, the Ilhan Omars of the world, and the Rashid Tlaib that put up nonsensical posts of the 5% truth or whatever you want to call it. Now, one person that just joined that was Jamal Bauman. Jamal Bauman, yep. Congressman for the 16th District, a very heavily Jewish area, which I used to live in. I believe, did you live there at some point too? In
that I never lived there, but I lived nearby. I lived on the Upper West Side, not in Riverdale, but not far away.
Yeah. Okay, so people know Riverdale, parts of Westchester County, you know, obviously a very Jewish area and also a non-Jewish area as well. Elliot Engel, who had been the congressman for years and years and years, was defeated in the primaries by a Jamal Bauman, who we could say doesn't look at Israel the same way that Elliot Engel used to in the, you know, at the, I don't know how else to describe.
Yeah, understatement.
Understatement of the year. Obviously, the Jewish groups, including Rabbi Avi Weiss of the Hebrew Institute of Riverdale, synagogue he used to go to, you know, have been trying to work with him. They see that didn't work. Now they are obviously protesting. He put out a statement from his office. I don't know why he's so worried so much about his own country, but he was very concerned about the situation in Israel. And is enough of black and brown bodies being brutalized and murdered, especially children, enough of the inhumanity, the White House must act. And I agree, because some of the people in Israel were actually black and brown that were murdered by the Hamas rockets. And there were children in there as well, if they were from Sephardic countries, and also foreign workers that are here in Israel as well.
Yeah.
You know, you read through some of the things that are written in here about the violence, people praying in Sheikh Jarrah, and I don't see, you know, anything here about the, you know, I see Hamas rocket attacks are not an act of peace, and that was it. Israeli government airstrikes are not a field. He had about six words of this statement, which I'm sure you've seen already.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah.
How do you combat that within the U.S. Congress and these Congress people that are so vehemently, they don't have a clue what they're really talking about. They really don't, folks. Bad enough that they don't know about their own country. They certainly then don't know about Israel. But they have millions and millions of followers out there. How do you combat that? Because it is coming from the, you know, U.S. government. And you see people like Ilhan Omar going out and calling out the President of the United States and the Secretary of State publicly calling them out for policy of their own party. I mean, I think that's just, you know, shocking as a... Forget about the fact about what they believe, what I believe, but the fact that they are going against their own government is shocking. The floor is yours, Anne.
Yeah, no, it's a very shocking development. I mean, I think it represents kind of, unfortunately, the Corbynization of the United States, which I did not think would, I thought maybe it was coming to America, but I did not think it would happen as quickly as it has. Referring to Jeremy Corbyn, who basically destroyed the UK Labour Party mm-hmm. over this exact type of rhetoric and agenda. What I don't understand, you know, I think people like Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar know exactly what they're doing. It's a deliberate strategy. It's very calculated. What I'm not sure about is people like AOC or Jamal Bowman, who are essentially ignorant over the situation. So it's kind of like, or I believe they are, but maybe I'm wrong. And maybe they also, you know, are, you know, I don't know if it's something that people on that their staffers are preparing for them and then they're just putting it out there. I frankly, I don't believe that AOC writes her own social media. I would actually be quite surprised.
I don't think she's intelligent enough to be able to do
I honestly think she has a very sophisticated, she's the product of a very sophisticated PR operation at the Justice Democrats. So I believe they actually probably write most of the things for her.
We should also mention, we should also mention that she displaced Joe Crowley, one of the all-time great congressmen of the United States of America, especially in New York City, who was
only by a few thousand votes, you know, because people just don't vote in the primaries.
I know. Well, that's exactly how that's exactly how Jamal Bowman got in. Because he was
exploit it, you know. Yeah,
Jews for Jamal were very active for him.
Yeah.
And they made sure that the older people were afraid to go out because it was during Corona. And he was able to canvass enough people to defeat Elliot Engel. Sorry about that little side view there.
No, it's true. It's true. You know, so it's just, you kind of wonder, you know, Like I said, I believe Omar and Tlaib are very much doing this deliberately. It's the question of the rest of the squad, like those two and Ayanna Pressley and Corey Bush. Like, are they also doing it deliberately or are they more clueless? You know, I mean, they're certainly clueless about the facts, but it's more a question of like who's influencing them or it's really a genuine thing that they believe, you know, and that they're part of this. I think also like it's a bit what the BDS movement, this anti-Israel movement in America that Tlaib and Omar, you know, leaders of, they are trying to impose America's issue and conflict about race onto Israel and the Palestinians, and it's completely ridiculous. It's a ridiculous analogy, but they do it because it has a lot of emotive power. So you have, you know, unfortunately, most people in America don't have a clue about what's going on here or the facts. And so it's a very compelling narrative. Oh, wow, you know, it's sort of like what's going on in America, even though there's no equivalence whatsoever. And they prey on people's ignorance. And so I think the other thing that's so disturbing to me was, you know, when Ilhan Omar got in, you know, she's a crank. And there have been other cranks in US Congress. She's certainly not the first, you know, yet there's many of these idiots. And, you know, I don't use that word lightly, but it does apply in these cases. But normally these people are marginalized by the party leadership, you know, they're not embraced. And this is, but what that was, what was shocking to me was that Nancy Pelosi, not only, you know, didn't like sideline these people, she embraced them. She posed on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine with them. There were lots of new women Democrats in 2018 in the Congress, moderate Democrats. People who represent mainstream views are not radical, like crazy people. And she didn't go on Rolling Stone with those people, you know? She chose to go on Rolling Stone with the cranks. And so, I do not understand what's going on in the Democratic Party, I have to say. I don't get it. You know, I was a lifelong Democrat. I consider myself now probably more independent, up until a few years ago. But, you know, so to me, it's quite troubling. And, you know, when you look at the election results from the last election, the Democrats barely won. And the places they really did the best were where people had more centrist or mainstream views. So again, I don't get why she's propping up these radicals and giving them like very juicy and important committee assignments. I don't know what she's afraid of, because you know, those are not the people winning elections. Or if they do win, it's because, like you were mentioning, you know, they kind of exploited the lack of voter turnout in the primaries.
They were smart.
And were able.
They were
smart. Exactly.
They were intelligent. They were smart.
100%. 100%.
You know, and
so
I got to touch on another topic before we let you go here.
Sure, sure.
It brings us back to your love of the Patriots. Okay.
Mac Jones.
Well, a little bit of that. Are you also a Celtics?
Okay.
Are you also a Celtics fan?
No, I have to say I'm not a big basketball fan.
Okay, but you do.
Sorry.
You definitely do know who Kyrie Irving is, correct?
Yes. Yes. My son has had his. I think he still has the jersey, but he didn't want to like deface it. He was pretty upset.
Yeah, so we have a number of T-shirts and jerseys as well in this household. Kyrie Irving played for the Boston Celtics for a little bit. Of course, he went to college at Duke. He played with the Cleveland Cavaliers, won a championship. Played under David Blatt, I might add, for a little bit of time. People that, of course, David Blatt, the American-Israeli coach, who coached Maccabi Tel Aviv championships here, unfortunately is fighting a battle against ALS right now. Just won a Bona Sion Award, David Blatt did. And, of course, now Kyrie Irving plays for the Brooklyn Nets, Brooklyn, New York. I think there's a few Jews in New York City, the last time I checked. Right, Ann?
Just a couple.
Yeah, just a couple, right? Now, Kyrie Irving has been, and I've been promoting this on my Twitter feed, that he has basically, he himself has been posting all kinds of things on Instagram. He's decided to become a Muslim, and he is embracing his new religion. Unfortunately, it looks like he's embracing the religion with people like Linda Sarsour.
Hi.
And he's putting up things, solidarity with Palestine, and advertising a talk with Linda Sarsour to understand what's going on the ground. He also has here as well pictures of Gaza coming from obviously not from a good place. And he, is looking to raise funds and doing that, so forth and so on. Not a good look from Kyrie Irving over there, at least to many people. He has 14.5 million followers on
Instagram.
Now, to give you an idea, I think LeBron James is about 50, maybe around that.
Okay.
So, that's still,
that's a lot. Still,
15 million.
That's huge.
LeBron is an iconic star. Kyrie's a superstar, but 15 million is a lot of people. How do you combat something like that? Now, I've been working in the background trying to combat that. But how does the simple person combat that? I don't think he's very educated on the matter.
For sure he is not.
and he's being fed things, and a lot of journalists don't even want to touch the story in the U.S. Some of the people associated with the team, I don't think, want to touch this. But how do you combat something like this, Anne?
It's really hard. I mean, you know, unfortunately, as you know, Jews were a very small community. You know, globally, we probably aren't even 15 million people, you know, just around there. So we're a very small global minority. We do have a lot of friends, but even when you add that up, you know, much of the world, unfortunately, leans in the other direction. So it's very hard to combat. I mean, I think the best, you know, people can do is just, you know, respond, you know, voice opposition. Unfortunately, there's really not a lot you can do when you have that someone with that type of reach. You know, I think one of the, you know, Gal Gadot, let's say, you know, she's a huge star, Israeli, you know, so she's wonderful. She's great for Israel because she puts on a very, you know, she's a beloved actress, and she always puts out very positive statements on social media. Like she put one out yesterday. You know, talking about both, you know, she's talking about peace and you know, suffering on for both Israelis and Palestinians. You know, she's not trying to be divisive. Mm-hmm. As much as you can amplify people who have that message rather than this very negative, divisive message, I think is important.
Correct.
But I think I think also I would just advise people, like, don't take your global affairs knowledge from sports and stars and celebrities. Like, they don't know what they're talking about. Most of them are super hypocrites. I mean, you know, LeBron James, who, like, Mr. China, you know, he has no problem with the, you know, Uyghur Muslims being held in concentration camps in China, you know, so I'm not going to take my moral authority from him, that's for sure. And so I know people look up to them as athletes, but I think, you know, that's kind of where things should stay. You know, you can admire them for the skills they have in their field, but they're not experts on politics or law. And, you know, their opinion really isn't any more valuable than anybody else's opinion. You know, but aside from that, yeah, it's really hard.
You know, I think we've touched on a lot of topics here. I can go on forever. I have so many examples from the negativity of Arsenal fans when I posted about Manor Solomon supporting Israel personally, the Israeli starlets, and the Arsenal fans, because Arsenal's considering signing him in the transfer window coming up, and they're like, we don't want him anywhere near our team. We're not interested. On and on and on and on. But then you have the positives. Like the Scotty Wilbekin
David and his Beckham.
Wife, yeah, David Beckham. And you have the positives like Scotty Wilbekin and his wife Maria, who were on TV yesterday. I'm with Israel. We're confident that God will watch over us. You know, those are the positive things, and we need as much positivity as possible coming here to combat the situation. It's not easy, it's not difficult. And for everybody that's listening here, Anne does holy work for Israel. In defense of Israel, and it's somebody that I look up to, and it's a lot of fun talking to you. Sometimes we talk over a Shabbat table, but
that's right.
but over Zoom is good too, and we can actually record it instead of sitting there and being frustrated as we're sitting at the Shabbat table, probably arguing about this and commenting about this person and that person. Anne Hertzberg, make sure you follow her on Twitter. Also, NGO Monitor at NGO Monitor. And Anne Hertzberg is AnneHerzberg 14. And thank you so much for coming on board. And I want to wish you and your family a Shabbat Shalom and a Chag Sameach for the Shavuot holiday that is coming up.
Oh, thank you so much. And likewise, and, you know, just to everybody, stay safe out there. And we're thinking of everybody, especially around Gaza.